Welcome to the No More Late Fees podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Jackie, and we're just two best friends and ex-Blockbuster employees rewatching some of the best and worst movies from the late 90s and early 2000s. This week, we are talking about the 1996 holiday movie remake, The Preacher's Wife, with our guest and podcaster, Shalina, of the Everything 90s podcast. Welcome.
Hey, everyone.
So if you want to get to know Shalina a little better, pause, check out our trailer from earlier this week, and then come back in. But before we dive in, let's get into some
housekeeping.
If you love the podcast and you want to support us, here are a few ways that you can.
Did you know writing a review and or rating us helps us get more listeners? If you want to be featured and help us grow, head to Apple, Spotify, Podchasers, iHeartRadio, Good Pods, or your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review.
And if you like what you hear and you want to buy us a virtual cup of coffee, head over to ko-fi.com/nomorelatefees.
And we are in the spirit. It is time. If you don't want to give money to those big conglomerates, head over to our Redbubble account and check out our store. We've got tons of merch that would be supporting small business owners, and you would be wearing really cool stuff. So check out nomorelatefees.redbubble.com. And let's get into the movie. What is The Preacher's Wife about, Jackie?
So a cleric begins to doubt himself and is visited by an angel. The heavenly emissary is supposed to help the good reverend over his midlife crisis, but he is distracted by the cleric's lovely young wife. This is a remake of the 1947 movie, The Bishop's Wife. This version stars Denzel Washington, Whitney Houston, Courtney B. Vance, Justin Pierre Edmond, Gregory Hines, Jennifer Lewis, and Loretta Devine. And it was directed by the amazing Penny Marshall. If you have not read or listened to Penny Marshall's autobiography, I highly recommend listening to it. It is fantastic. And she reads it, and that's just worth the $15 on Audible right there. It's fantastic. Anyway,
check that out.
And she was best friends with Carrie Fisher, and so she talks a lot about her, which is also a lot of fun. Back to the movie. It was written by Nat Maldine and Alan Scott, and you can currently watch it on Tubi and Hulu Plus. But before we start, let's get into our ratings rewind.
So, you know the drill. Before we get into the movie, we will reveal the rating our Y2K versions of ourselves would give, then at the end, see if our current selves agree with our initial rating. Our scale consists of would buy it again.
The best, would play on repeat.
5-day rental.
Would watch again.
2-day rental.
Okay, but nothing to write home about.
And same day rental.
Trash. Straight up trash.
So, Shalina, we'll start with you. What was your Y2K rating of The Preacher's Wife?
Okay, so fun fact. I saw this movie for the first time 2 years ago.
Okay. So what was your, I guess, initial rating of
I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I would choose 5-day rental.
Okay.
Perfect.
How about you, Jackie?
I have never seen this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a never seen. I would say my younger self. Okay. I give it a 2-day rental because my younger self, when she went to see this movie, was pissed. What you mean Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington don't end up together? What is this movie? Because let me tell you, the way in which they advertise this movie, you could not tell younger me I wasn't getting a rom-com love between Denzel Washington and Whitney Houston. And then you're telling me he's some angel? And who is Courtney B. Vance? at the time, like, I didn't know he was going to be our Queen Angela Bassett's boo. Like, I didn't care. All I know is he was standing in the way of true love. So I watched it and I was done with it. I ain't watching this every Christmas. This ain't no every Christmas. Not in this state. Nope. Mm-mm. So I was very upset. I will say the album, on the other hand, was a staple.
Oh, it's so good.
Yes. And was definitely played for Christmas on repeat, especially Whitney's Joy to the World version. But yeah, it's a 2-day rental, almost borderline trash because I was so angry.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So let's get into the box office. So I couldn't find an actual budget, but it seems like the budget for this movie ranged from 40 to 65 million, including like marketing expenses. And it made $57 million worldwide. It was considered a box office bomb, considering the cast and the amount of money that went behind it. But it did not like perform the way the studio thought it was going to be. It was developed by Denzel Washington. He had an entertainment company called Mundy Lane Entertainment, and he was quoted as saying, "I'm happy to know that on a film like Devil in a Blue Dress, we put 100 or so many Black people to work, and it was the same with The Preacher's Wife, and it will be the same thing with other films that I'm involved in, whether I'm on a producer level or not. We do it because they're capable and because nobody else is necessarily looking out for them," he says, "of African-American talent." So this was like a passion project for him. I also thought it was very interesting that this movie was not only produced by his company, but included Samuel Golden Jr., who is the son of one of the men who created MGM Studio play part. So, and another fun fact is that his son, do you guys know who his son is? Tony Goldwyn, who played in Scandal as the president, and also from Ghost, the evil demon guy. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So he is a Nepo baby to the highest extent. Like, if you're gonna Nepo, you gonna Nepo in the MGM family. And then the other producer was Deborah Martin Chase, who we all know as Whitney Houston's producing partner. She's behind not only, you know, helping with this movie, but The Princess Diaries and Cheetah Girls and the Cinderella movie and just so many more. If like, if you really interested about her career, you should really look into it. She went to law school and she's one of the first Black producers to really be a part of a Black producer picked up by a studio. I'm like botching that up, but she's got a very interesting career. And I do find it also interesting that she did run Mundy Lane for Denzel from 1992 to 95. And then she ended up being in charge of Whitney Houston's production company, Brown House Productions, from 95 to 2000. So it's like once they met on the set, she looks like she stole her from Denzel Washington. But she worked with Whitney pretty much for a good while. And then she went and started her production company. So yeah, a lot of big hands in this movie. And then Roger Ebert, he gave the film 3 out of 4 stars, but was a bit equivocal in his review, concluding The Preacher's Wife is a sweet and good-hearted comedy about the holiday season. This movie could have done more, but what it does, it makes you feel good about. And I would have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was just something like I felt was missing. But we will get into it because I really just think this movie should have been called Let God Send an Angel to Steal This Man's Wife.
That's too long of a title.
And also, let's talk about gentrification.
Yeah.
Oh,
pretty much. Yeah, let's jump into it. I'm gonna kind of let you drive, Daniel, since you've seen this before, but I did take notes so we don't get lost along the way.
Because I know I watched it, but I don't know what I remember. I also I do want to say that I think it's crazy interesting that Denzel Washington thought of Julia Roberts originally to play the role of the wife first before
Julia Roberts.
Yes. Now you have to remember, here's the thing. I think as an audience, we have been just completely robbed of being able to have like a real rom-com with Denzel Washington in it. I think in that time frame, and he's talked about this, he was always very careful about who his romantic partners were on screen, how he was represented, because he knew that his core audience were Black women. Mm-hmm. So when he did the Pelican Brief, I don't remember if it was 93, 94, with Julia Roberts, they had like crazy chemistry, but he made sure that like it didn't really go anywhere because he mm-hmm. knew who his core audience was and he knew they would probably lose their shit. I mean, not just Black women, but like on the other side, it was still quite racist even in the 90s at that time, but they got on really well offset. They're still pretty close. She gave him his Academy Award. She was able to be the one that gave it to him. But yeah, so at the time it's not crazy that he was thinking about her, but he reconsidered and got Whitney Houston, which I think was probably the best thing ever, because again, that soundtrack and that is Whitney's roots. So I say that, but let's get into the movie. Gosh. Okay. Sorry, Jackie. Give me a second. I'm trying to think of how it started.
The little kid narrates.
Yeah.
Jeremiah. Right. Jeremiah's on my list of kids that annoyed me. I'm sorry.
You're not wrong.
Was it his voice?
The script?
It was the poor boy. Like, I said, weren't there rules about how much this child could be on screen? Like, he don't need to be in this movie that much. He really don't. I think it would have been even better if it was like adult Jeremiah looking back. You know, older Morgan Freeman narrate what's happening.
Or just Morgan Freeman's voice, but it's the 5-year-old telling the story.
Right. Or why couldn't have Denzel done it? Like, this child is the pronunciation, the it's the nasalness of it too. Like he, and I think it's funny.
Jennifer Lewis kept saying, "You got that congestion. We need to rub the Vicks on you."
Yep,
you were born with that congestion.
I wrote that down. I'm like, not the Vicks.
At least they wrote his congestion into the script.
But it was it was killing me. Like, I know that these kids are supposed to be super adorable, but he kept taking me out of the movie. Anywho, the little boy is narrating and he's pretty much telling us that he has this unbelievable story that nobody seems to believe him and his family that this happened. And it just starts off with us being introduced to his mother, played by Whitney Houston, who is Julia, and his father, who is played by Courtney B. Vance, the Reverend Henry Biggs. And so you kind of just get to see their life, where they're at. You know, they're getting ready for Christmas. Also, his grandmother, Marguerite, played by Jennifer Lewis, is there, and we learn that she is visiting. We also learn that Whitney Houston's father used to be the preacher at the church, and he has passed away, and he gave the church to Henry. And Henry is struggling. He has not been doing well. He seems a little stressed and depressed. Also, Julia and Henry are not doing well in their relationship. And I do like that Marguerite has little comments to talk to, like, say, I noticed things ain't going right in this house. Something's not right here.
I love how Julia is always like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, we all see it, Julia. We all know what she's talking about. You can pretend all you want.
You and your husband and have no chemistry. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zero
chemistry. I think that's what was the hardest for me is, like, Courtney B. Vance is a fabulous actor, but in this, like, he gave almost nothing. Like, there was nothing I could, like, oh, yeah, like, he has something, they just have to reconnect. It was just nothing. And then you have Denzel being Denzel, and I'm like, of course we're going to go with Dudley the Angel. Why wouldn't we?
Right. I just feel like, from a casting standpoint, you had to have somebody, like, and Whitney Houston has chemistry with a cardboard box.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have to do much. She's just her, you could tell, like, she's acting, but she's also herself, and she's so charismatic. Yeah. Like, if you know anything about her life, everybody was in love with her. I mean, for God's sakes, Kevin Costner took 20 minutes during her funeral, while he was a married man, to say that she was one of his true loves, and that he still has I Will Always Love You as a ringtone to this day. He was married on the pulpit talking about this woman. So just know, this woman had many admirers. So it's hard not to fall in love with her and have chemistry. I just don't understand what was happening.
She and Lionel Richie had more chemistry than her and her supposed husband.
Hell yeah.
I think he did a good job, though, in that role, because that was the whole point of the angel coming, is to fix their marriage.
Yeah, fix the marriage, but I have to believe that they got married in the first place for a reason.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But do you guys remember that part where she is trying to tell Henry about something, and then he's like, shush, he like puts his hand on her mouth? I don't know if I can't remember if he says shush woman or, but he just like puts his hand on her. I was like, oh no, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. He also, like, the movie tries to make her dowdy. Mm-hmm. And she says that, like, one, it's not like, and I'm telling you, they literally, there's one dress that she has in this movie that looks like a straight out potato suit. Like, the color is...
Was it when they were skating? After
thinking. Yeah, like, she's wearing Amish woman clothes almost in this movie. And you
and still are fabulous.
Right. And the wig, there is a wig in this movie that I see. Not in this green earth. Not Whitney. Why y'all did this to her?
Which one are you talking about? Is it the one that has, like, the swoop?
Yeah, some is happening.
It looks like a mullet, a curly mullet.
It's bad. It's a bad wig. It is bad, and I don't
like
mean
Tyler
that
Perry either. Bad.
It's borderline. Yes, it's borderline.
And you have to remember, this is the time where Whitney was in her full blown addiction. So this is not even 100% top of the line Whitney. She was coming to set high every day, and she was still delivering.
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. She was sweating real hard already. Like,
there were a couple singing scenes. I was like, oh, girl.
So you kind of see how there's already friction in the marriage, where Henry is, he's preaching at the church, and his wife, Julia, she notices that he is pulling from one of her father's old sermons. And so she's told the rest of the choir, like, we need to sing certain parts and help him out. And you could see the resentment, and already he's like pissed, you know, He is literally struggling to do all of these things, but not do any of these things great by mm-hmm. himself. His wife is like salivating at the opportunity to really help him and be partners in their ministry. And he is constantly sidelining her. And it's almost like he wants to put her in a place to like hush up. But mm-hmm. I think, and we see this in some of his interactions, at one point he does yell at her because I think he feels the pressure of not being as great as her father. And so I don't know if it's necessarily something she put on him, but more that maybe he's putting on himself. Because then we learn later that they've known each other since diapers. So he mm-hmm. knew her father a long time. And I think he's having a hard time being inspired and getting out of his shadow. So you're seeing that dynamic kind of play out. And you could see them wanting to argue, but trying not to in front of their son and in front of the church. And just things aren't going well. And the church is falling apart. So we're learning all of these different details. But we're also seeing Henry experience that like moment by himself. He's in the room and he starts praying because everything's falling apart. Like nothing is going well. And he's asking for help. And you see the little boy asking for help. So like literally everyone in the family is praying for help and it's not going well. Jackie, get me back on to where we are. Cause I'm just...
Yeah. So, and like you said, it's just, he's doing everything, but not doing any of it well. And so there's a youth center he was trying to keep going that closes down and he's apologizing to the kids and they're like, where do we go? Like, it's really hard not to just go back to the streets and go back to what we're doing now that we don't have the support system. So he's trying to figure that out. This teenage kid Billy is mistakenly identified as being part of a robbery, and so Henry's going to support him but really just kind of sitting there while this kid is like, I didn't do this, and but not really advocating for him. He's just going and showing up, and that's pretty much all he can do right now. And so after all the prayer, Jeremiah and Hakeem are playing outside. We find out that Hakeem is being was temporarily placed with his grandmother and that he is essentially entering the foster care system soon. And so Jeremiah is struggling with that his friend Hakeem is being taken away from him. So they're playing outside together and prayers are answered. All of our prayers are answered and Denzel falls from the sky.
I would.
And scares the kids.
Yeah.
As they're building their snowman.
Yes.
Or making snow angels. Snow angels.
Yeah. I would. Okay. So I had questions about like the whole Hakeem thing, right? Mm-hmm. When like this whole situation with Hakeem, like Henry and Julia look like they give zero shits. Like they talk about caring, but like in no way do they seem tore up about this. There is a scene when the social worker comes to take Hakeem and Whitney's like, and so Julia is like, okay,
see
well,
you later.
See ya. He's just like, bye. And then her son, Jeremiah, is like, I'm so sad. Who am I going to tell my secrets to? I will say that one hit me. And she was like, you can write him a letter.
Well, and I just had questions being somewhat familiar with PS and the foster care system. Usually they try and keep families together. So if there is a family member willing to take care of the child, they don't just take them away and put them in a random foster care home. And then
the grandma was too old. That was the problem. She was not fit to take care of him.
There wasn't someone else in the community that was related to Hakeem that could take him.
The damn, they could have taken him. Like why?
From the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, now we're so just different.
Traumatizing this child for a few months till they get their heads out of their asses. And they're like, oh, we can adopt Hakim.
Also, when they came to get Hakim, I know we skipped past some stuff, but that's fine. Jeremiah goes and gets all these Hershey bars and says, just in case they starve you. How do you know this, Jeremiah?
Oh, yes.
And the mom does not self-correct. She just watches him and says, all right, let's get your jacket. Like, she doesn't say
that's a good idea in case they starve him.
Right. Or say, like, Jeremiah, that's not what's going to happen. And Hakim, you're going to be like, no reassurance. Yeah. Like,
no. Comfort him.
She was giving very Stepford wife. And then also, poor Hakim, Jeremiah's like, you going to run away? And Hakim is like, we don't do that around here. No. I'm going to go. Like, Hakim just seems so grown and just like, I'm going to do what I got to do. You know, does not even flinch. And I'm just like, Whitney, girl.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, even as you're saying this, I'm like, yeah, I guess that kind of went over my head while watching it. But there was a point where she was talking to Henry and he's like, Henry, aren't you going to do something about Hakim leaving? Because the youth shelter was closing. And then she was asking him, like, what are you going to do about it? Which kind of showed her care too. But what is he going to do about it though? He's like,
I'm wondering because they did have, like, you're right, they did have a conversation when they were going to go to sleep and or getting ready for bed or something like that, and she was like, we need to talk about blah blah blah, and he was like cutting her off, and I'm wondering if she was trying to talk about the Hakim situation and adopting him. I feel like he kind of shut it down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she just, even if he shut it down, she just seemed so, like, despondent when it was time for Hakim to go. So that whole situation was crazy. I also want to talk about the fact that Jennifer Lewis is not that much older than Whitney Houston. No. And I know Black Don't Crack, and it's hard for us to tell people's ages, but I really wasn't buying that she was her mother. It just felt like it would have been even better if, like, they were sisters, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because it felt like an auntie at best. Like,
yeah. It was throwing me off. And then Loretta Devine, like, knowing that those women, Jennifer Lewis and Loretta Devine, kind of were, like, in that acting sphere around the same time, kind of also threw things off. So I was like, this is weird. Like, y'all couldn't find somebody who was it. And I also think that because Whitney Houston's mom is in the movie, I just was like, why didn't y'all just make her mom? Because Sissy could have done it. It was, yeah. I mean, Jennifer Lewis was hilarious and she added levity to parts, but
yeah, like, she's good comic relief.
Yeah, this is weird, but okay. I'll pretend.
Did you know that, here's my fun fact that's not on the list I'm really excited to share with you. Mm-hmm. So the scene where they're in the gold robes performing in the church,
mm-hmm.
there was an extra dressed in yellow, and Penny Marshall's like, it's too close to the robe color, have that extra leave. Well, come to find out that extra was Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, wow.
And like later on, I guess Melissa went up to Penny Marshall, like when she was somebody, and was like, hey, so on the preacher's wife, awesome. Remember that extra you threw out? That was me.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
What scene was she in? She was in the choir? I think
she was in the church.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I had no idea.
Oh, I didn't either. And I was like, oh, a fun fact. So now Dudley is on Earth. He's kind of getting his bearings, trying out pizza for the same time, for the first time, insulting the guy that owns the pizza parlor.
Well, he was more because he was, at this point, he had been rejected by Henry because he had introduced himself as an angel, and Henry, being a man of God, was still a non-believer that this was an angel, kind of, you know, kicked him to the side. I don't think the guy was offended that he offended him personally, but because he called the preacher stubborn, it made it feel like he was insulting the preacher and he was like, your money's no good here. But I was very excited because I believe this movie's supposed to take place in New Jersey. The church itself is Trinity United Methodist Church in Newark, New Jersey. And it served as the big New York church. They actually did like a whole renovation of the church just for the movie. But I was very excited to see that New York style pizza. Yes, it's in New Jersey, but I'll take it as long as it's not that casserole stuff from Chicago. Because y'all know how I feel about that damn Chicago pizza.
We do.
Are you tired of waiting for sparks to fly on your dating app? Do you dream of running through airports to deliver an out-of-breath, unplanned monologue? Then stop doom-scrolling and start listening to meet-cute rom-coms. Feel-good love stories that take you from chance encounter to grand romantic gesture in just 15 minutes. We're bringing rom-coms back. Get a brand new meet-cute series on the first Tuesday of every month with new episodes twice a week. Fall in love with meet-cute rom-coms wherever you find your podcasts.
Is this where we kiss?
So we're back at the pizza shop. He's getting kicked out because he's being disrespectful of the pastor. And then he goes to get a hot dog. And then his path kind of crosses with Dudley again and with
Jeremy. Gloria.
Julia. Oh. I don't know who Gloria is. I just made that.
You haven't said that in a while, but I'm excited about it. Let me add that to the list.
Anyways, Jeremiah and Julia, he crosses paths with them. Lord.
And then, is this before that? Yeah, before that happens, Julia is prepping for the holiday performance at church. So she's working with the kids, getting them all costumed up, their parts rehearsed. And while they are rehearsing, actually, it's when she's working with the choir. That comes later. Sorry. Anyway, the boiler blows up while they're on the choir.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this scene. Because they're rehearsing, they're jamming. They're singing to the Lord for real, for real. But at one point, they hear another noise. And 100% Julia does what we do when we hear things when our car isn't right. Like, you ever been driving and you hear something with your car? And I give a shout out to my friend Candace because she always... says this, it's like the car started acting up, so I turned the volume of the radio up.
Oh gosh.
Not my problem.
No, it is your problem.
It's future shameless problem.
So turn the radio up, and that's exactly what Julia said. I hear something, but I don't hear it. Everybody in the right, keep on singing. Let's get the noise back up. And the drummer has to be the funniest part in this whole situation because he is jamming out. And then you literally see smoke behind him. And they can also see smoke on the side. Like, the smoke is visible.
Yeah.
Y'all are not doing a live performance. This is not like pyro stuff happening. Somebody should have been like, oh shit, there's smoke, like what's happening? And when Henry comes home, he says to Marguerite, are you smoking? So he smells smoke, which is also weird because if you're smoking a cigarette, that is a different smell than something being on fire.
Yeah.
Let's keep that. And then the damn boiler blows up and the drummer throws his sticks up in the air and he's like, I'm out.
Peace.
Also, I just feel like people were not moving fast enough with some sort of explosion and fire situation.
Yeah. Definitely. Like, isn't there like a cutoff valve? Didn't we learn that in Masterminds? There's some cutoff valve that we could have utilized.
Something.
No one was running downstairs to turn the boiler off. Like,
no. I think they tell Henry when they're coming outside, and then Henry sees them, and then she's like, Henry, the boiler. And then he goes in that, those,
the storm he goes doors.
Yeah.
Things aren't going well. So now the church has no heat, which also I believe, shouldn't it be the house doesn't have heat? Because isn't their house, is their house not connected to the church, or is, did I make that up in my head?
It's beside it.
Yeah.
It's like, so like,
I don't think the boiler, I think they have their own boiler at their house.
Oh, okay.
Like Home Alone.
So things aren't going well.
And Joe Hamilton, who is a realtor, reaches out to Henry and is like, I want to talk. And Henry's like, no, like, you've been buying up all this property and I don't like where this is headed. And they keep seeing commercials where he's building like these like apartment complexes and like come and live here type thing. And so Joe is kind of like trying to get people to move out from the city that they're in type thing. But then the boiler blows and he's like, I'm going to have to meet with Joe because he's like very prominent in the community. So I have to take this meeting, even though I'm going to say no to whatever he wants type thing.
And he has other people in the parish that like are telling him that he's doing too much. Like the church has like a bus, and when he goes to help the guy who has been wrongfully convicted of or arrested for the shooting, he, you know, has the bus come in and take the kids and of the family or whatever. But I think it's kind of messed up that he's like, this isn't our job or whatever. But like, it kind of is like your job is, as the church, to be the center of the community is to help the community. Like, why would you be complaining about that?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of weird. I also just think that Henry trying to do too much, but he doesn't have support.
So it's at this point that Julia meets Dudley because he just keeps showing up at the house. He's like, one way or another, I'm going to get you. Whatever avenue I have to find forward, God sent me. I'm here to do a job. So Julia talks to Dudley, and then all of a sudden Dudley is upstairs with Jeremiah. And I'm like, that's not a great parent to let this man alone in your child's room with them unsupervised that you just met.
I was having so much anxiety with this scene. First and foremost, nobody was asking real questions. This man just shows up. And this is before Henry could even like say, yes, this is really happening. Like, this is a person I know. The Marguerite is all on board and thinking he's hot. Gloria doesn't question anything. And he's upstairs with their child for way too long.
Yes.
Wow. I was just too into the he's an angel character. I like that part just went over my head.
Yeah. Very sus. Didn't care for it. And then Jeremiah's kind of saying like, oh, well, that ambulance over there, it hasn't worked in a while. And so Dudley's trying to prove that, like, I'm magic. I can do things. And he gives it a siren. And Jeremiah's like, that toy didn't make that noise before.
And it's like, it didn't have a siren. And then he's like,
so, yeah, nope. And then he walks by a computer. And he says, fishies in a TV. I'm like, okay, so Dudley kind of starts talking about when he was human, but he's waited a long time to come back. But he knows what a TV is. So how long ago are we talking, Dudley?
From the dance moves, and he said he was doing the Popeye, I want to say 60s or 70s.
Okay.
And so I have it
wasn't
to confirm
that long ago.
No, but I have to confirm with my mother because it's a dance I've heard of, but a dance I don't know.
Okay.
Nana, do you know a dance called the Popeye? Did you do that dance, Nana?
No.
So it's after my grandma's time. It's got to be my mom's generation.
Okay. 1962. Yeah.
Okay, so my mom was too young. Maybe Nana didn't do it in Jamaica.
It wasn't a Jamaican dance.
No.
And okay. So Dudley has this Indiana Jones journal with drawings in it, but it's drawings of like the Windows logo. And I'm like, what is this journal for?
And it does, yeah, I didn't see any words in it.
No.
It's like the Blue's Clues notebook.
Is this the inspiration for the Blue's Clues handy dandy notebook?
Oh no, God. I don't even know which one came first because I think Blue's Clues was on before this movie came out.
Denzel with his handy dandy notebook.
So, yeah, he's learning a bunch of stuff. He scared the bejesus out of Beverly, played by Loretta Devine. I also feel like she was not utilized properly.
No.
At all in this movie. I think not even a smidge. But
I love her. And I felt the same way. I'm like, where's my... She had a couple of one-liners when she asked, Lord, please put that man under my Christmas tree. Like, That's the vibes I needed from her in this movie. And I only got one line.
Yeah. And she didn't even seem like completely phased by Dudley at all. And I was like, hello, this man is hot. What's happening here?
Yeah. No, she wanted.
She had her eyes on someone else.
That drove the bus.
I just think of him as the man from Coming to America. I was like, you know, I never really thought that about it, that he's in other movies, because that's the only role that I know him as. Anywho, so Dudley has now made his presence in the home. Now everyone thinks he has come from the Bishop group or I don't even know where, like
the head office.
The head office, right. And he's now pushing his way into Henry's business. And his main focus is to get Henry and Gloria back on the same page. Like everything
not
else.
Gloria. Not Gloria.
Not who Gloria.
Gloria? I don't know. Please keep this in.
You've done really well for a really long time. But I'm kind of loving that you can't get characters that you're trying to get.
Julia. Yes. Julia. Oh my God. Y'all. Remember when I said that Denzel wanted Julia Roberts to potentially play this role? I wonder if he named the character Julia after her.
That's how I remembered her name. I'm like, okay, Julia, makes sense. I don't know where Gloria's coming from.
I don't know.
your Gloria voice keeps taking the microphone.
Okay. Can we talk about the scene when Julia and Dudley and Jeremiah go shopping. And Julia is looking at a 90 in the window display. And the angel, Dudley, is very hardcore encouraging. They're having a very sexual, like, fire-burning situation. Talking about a 90. He's telling her, oh, no, you need to go in there and try it on. And you need to buy that. That is the perfect gift from Henry. Like, and Julia's still, like, I don't understand why she doesn't say, this is inappropriate.
Yeah. She was just looking for some sort of connection at this point. Yeah, like, her husband had been strong-arming her for so long that she's like, oh, someone's paying attention to me. Cool. I saw it as, like, almost the entire way through the movie, I was like, oh, his intentions are like pure. Like he's just really trying to get her to reconnect with her husband. But then towards the end, I was like, hold on now. This is not what I thought it was. It was very confusing for me.
I just want someone to make a cut of this movie where they take out Courtney B. Vance completely and make this the rom-com it needs to be between Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington. If I could just get those parts, that is how I will remember this movie. And I will end it at him looking at the picture of the married. And that's it. That's all I need. That's how it ends. They're married now.
Did you catch when Jeremiah's having a conversation with Henry after and was like something along the lines of, I know what mom wants for Christmas. She wants to go to bed. And then he's like, what do you mean by that? He's like, because she was looking at the nightgown with Dudley. And then he goes, with Dudley.
There is a point in time in the movie where it becomes very apparent to Henry that this angel is trying to scheme on my wife in front of my eyes.
She's hot. What can he say? You're not paying attention to her, so
it's insane. But that 90 situation, because I was like, why was young Danielle so mad? And now I know this movie was giving me a lot to go on to want these two to be together. They knew what they were doing.
I want a sequel or like a prequel of Dudley's life on Earth.
Yeah.
And like it just ends with him like being hit by a bus or something. And then it's like, go see the preacher's wife.
Why a bus? Jesus, Jackie.
Well, he said I was taken out too soon. So that's what I imagined. Like he was just like minding his business and then didn't see it coming. Like George.
Well, yeah. Dudley was Dudley for real and was creeping. Mm-hmm. Julia was creeping.
I think, like, looking back with the time I watched it for this episode, I think after she sings at the club, I think that's when he kind of falls in love for her. Before that, I feel like all his intentions were pure. Even afterwards, but I feel like that scene kind of changed his feelings for her.
Because he talked about, like, and they were talking about with
Brislow.
Lionel Richie, because I don't know.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't acting. Lionel Richie's character was talking about when you hear her sing, that's what it feels like to fall in love. And that's when Dudley was like, I want to hear what it sounds like to fall in love. And she gave it to him and he fell in love. So up to this point, he is trying really hard to get Henry to spend time with Julia. Henry is late to a lunch that they're supposed to have where he's supposed to pick up Jeremiah. So you see Dudley like filling in this void in this family when Henry is really supposed to be there, and Henry just keeps on showing up and missing things. You can actively see Henry is just, he starts to try and he doesn't really start to try until he starts to realize that Dudley might be competition for him. That is like wake up call for him. Which may be why God sent Dudley. He's like, you know what? This man ain't going to listen to nothing. But if I send one of my finest angels,
I've been saving you for a special occasion.
Maybe that might hit Henry to wake the hell up.
Henry has to go and meet with Joe Hamilton. And what Joe is proposing is that he become the pastor at essentially a mega church. It's all like made out of glass and it like has all of these like bells and whistles and like different like senior center, youth group, all of these things. But it's not located where they live. It's like out further. But Joe has also kind of alley-ooped Henry and kind of talked it up to the other members of the church.
The members of the board.
Sneaky. Yeah.
And he's also Gregory Hines. Joe is also a member of the board, and he states that I'm a member of the board, but I'm not really going to church because he's been scheming this whole time. He's trying to, essentially, he wants to move the church so he can tear down the old church because he's trying to get as much property. He's gentrifying the neighborhood, and we're so used to other communities coming into the Black neighborhood gentrifying, but Joe is a member of the grew up in the community, went, you know, came and left, made money. And so they kind of talk about it a little bit because Henry calls him out on the fact that, you know, we wouldn't need all this help if people like you weren't allowed to be able to leave and go live somewhere else with your money instead of putting it back into the community. And I think that is such a key component because, you know, segregation was obviously awful and harmful in so many ways. But when we were segregated, the Black communities had really no choice when it came to money to keep it within their communities and be able to take care of each other. But the moment that things kind of opened up and people started to get money and started to move it into other neighborhoods, you know, that kind of tore away the revenue stream. And once people made it big, they left. They did not come back to the communities that they were raised in. So Joe is a big representation of that. I do like that in the end, it comes full circle that he decides to like not tear down the church and whatnot. So it was like this movie kind of talked about such a big topic that plagues the Black community, that not just the Black community, but many minority communities around this country. So it just talked about it a little bit, but didn't really get into it.
Yeah. And also during this conversation with Joe, they talk about how they're going to televise his Christmas sermon. And he's like, if you agree to do this, I'll fix the boiler at St. Matt's. And right. So that's why Henry ends up agreeing, is because, oh, we'll get our boiler fixed at least. And unbeknownst to him, Joe owns the building is planning on tearing it down anyway. So like, it's just empty promises pretty much. I mean, he does buy him a new boiler that is only going to be there for a few months. And so he goes home and he tells Julia about it. And she's like, this is my community too. This is the place where my father preached, where I was raised, and you just made this decision without me. And now you're telling me like I have to move and do all of this stuff. So she is not happy with him, as she puts it, giving up on St. Matt's. And he's like, well, I got a new boiler out of the deal. So there's that.
Yeah, she's just pissed. And I would be pissed too, because like, this is a partnership and you, yes, you're the pastor, but like, we should be making decisions together, and you're just unilaterally kicking me out of so much stuff of what's happening that affects us, you know?
And she's just as much a part of the church because she does all of the choir. She does all of, it seems like all of the programs that happen within the church. She's in charge of that. Yeah, he preaches on Sundays, but the whole community is what she is involved in.
Yeah.
And that is rooted in the church. And it's around this time she has a conversation with Dudley, and he's like, I'm going to talk to Henry. He needs to take you out on a date. You need to get dressed up. You need to go out on a date. I'm going to talk to him. Well, Henry is so up his own ass about stuff. He's like, not even listening when Dudley's like, no, like this is something you need to do as a partner. And eventually Henry's like, you just take her. And like, she's already getting ready. She's excited about it. And then Dudley's like, okay, I guess I'm taking you. And she's just like, at this point, like, whatever, let's go. You know, like, obviously, like, it's almost like she comes to expect it at this point. Like, obviously, he's going to disappoint me in yet another way.
Yeah, it's disappointment.
So this is when we go to the jazz club. Come to find out, this is kind of where their spot was, where Henry proposed to her. And so it's a really special place. And Bristow and Dudley encourage her to sing so Dudley can hear what it's like to fall in love. And fall in love he does. And now it's like, okay, well, this woman is special.
Well, and... yeah. I definitely want to make sure that we don't miss the part that, mm-hmm. like, we don't really get to, like, we see Denzel Washington be funny in movies. Like, he has funny moments, but we never, like, got to really see him in a comedy, and I just think he would be amazing in it. Mm-hmm. But the scene of him dancing.
Oh, yeah. And the stares that he got.
Because he was doing some very old school moves, and I could see Whitney Houston just, like, giving him an eye, but I know she wanted to crack the hell up. He really was
going for it.
Most, yeah. And then when Lionel Richie's character comes, like, he's really trying to cock block for sure, because he could tell there's a vibe there, and he's like, nah, man, I don't like this. So, and then we get to see her sing I Believe in You and Me, which is a cover song, but she does it justice as makes it her own. Yeah, this was another beautiful song. And I think this song definitely, let me see, I believe it charted.
Her version or the cover?
I think
or her original. Okay.
Her version definitely charted, but I'll look that up as we continue. So
yeah, after they get home, now Henry is pissed. He's like, you took her where? That's the place I proposed. Now, all of a sudden he cares. And Dudley's like, you told me to. Exactly. So I did. I didn't know. I'm brand new here.
I found out. So originally the song was sung by the Four Tops. And it became a top 5 pop and R&B hit in the U.S. when she remade it in 96. The original didn't make it to the top 40 in 82 when it was originally released. But when she did it, became a hit. It charted.
Who knew?
It charted at number 40 for the Hot Black Singles chart for the Four Tops. And then top 5 for her. Yeah. Okay.
And this album, it is the best-selling gospel album of all time. And it remained at number 1 for 26 weeks on the Billboard Top Gospel Albums chart.
And she received a Grammy nomination for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance that year as well. So, way to go, Whitney.
Oh, impressive.
So now when Dudley's having this conversation with Henry, and Henry's all bent out of shape about Dudley doing what he told him to do, Dudley's like, you know, you need to start, like, asking the questions, looking people in the eye, like, having conversations about them. And it was related to Billy, because he was being arraigned the next day, and he's like, have you asked him, like, looked him in the eye and asked him if he did it or not? And so the next day at the arraignment, Henry actually follows that advice and, like, all of a sudden becomes this lawyer. He walks into the courtroom and he's like, we have receipts. Have you looked at the evidence? I'm like, sir, you are a preacher.
Yeah, that was when, like, yes, I know we had a literal angel fall from the sky, but that was the part of the movie that was unrealistic to me.
Yeah.
That's when I was like, whoa.
Can't just be coming up in here.
Yeah.
I was like, flag on the play, sir.
But he gets Billy off. He is released. His family's very excited. And then the next scene is the ice skating scene. So this is when Henry promises to meet them, to meet Jeremiah and Julia to go ice skating. He doesn't show up. So they literally put Jeremiah on a bench and they're like, watch us.
Wait, one.
He's getting tired though. He's getting tired.
Before we get into this, because I have a lot of thoughts, I do want to just highlight that, like, the fact that Henry didn't believe Billy had a lot to do with that. Like, he had these preconceived judgments about Billy that because Billy didn't go to church, is that that's his name, right? It's Billy?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I wrote down. So
that's what I have to check now. But, like, he was telling Dudley, like, oh, well, he doesn't go to church and he doesn't pray. And then he even said it to Dudley, oh, well, have you prayed? And so I was just like, aren't you supposed to just, like, try to help them and not judge them? So this, I think it was just like a really good example to show how far Henry had gotten off course. Mm-hmm. And we do see him like racing to try to get to the ice skating ring after the whole trial or whatever. But yes, this ice skating scene.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Was Dudley messing with the streetlights so Henry could make it?
I don't think so.
It felt crafty.
But he was having the time of his life. And we have to look at, I paid very close attention. Did y'all look at Jeremiah's face? Because that little boy is go ahead.
Oh, he looked miserable? Like a little bit miserable?
He looked like Dudley trying to steal my mama. Right, if like Dudley, don't play in my face like this.
Yeah, because there was one part where he's like, "Mommy."
Yeah,
and then they just wait,
and they're like, "Hey," and he's like, "Hello," and then some random man brings him. First of all, you don't just give a child that age hot chocolate without monitoring them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're gonna spill it or they're gonna burn themselves. Like, what is happening right now? I was happy he was shutting up, but also, still, this is not good parenting.
Yeah.
Julia needed a vacation. She was about done with her life, y'all. She was pretending she was a single woman.
And this was one of the scenes with the really bad wig.
I don't even know that much about wigs. But I could tell even that was not looking good. Not at all.
So they get home from ice skating and Henry apologizes and everything. And they're like, it's okay. Dudley took us. And so Dudley and Henry get into it and they're arguing. And Henry's like, keep away from my wife. I need you to leave. I want you to leave. And Dudley's like, it's in the handbook. I told you the rules and I can't leave until the job that God sent me here for is complete. So I'm sticking around. And Henry did not like that and threw his little Indiana Jones journal, his handy dandy notebook, in the fire. And it made like this big, like, potion whoosh. And Dudley's just like, oh, you're in really big trouble. You shouldn't have done that.
Oh, it's that good. And everybody hears them, like, arguing. And Julia, man, I'm telling you, it is glorious. Just at the tip of his tongue. Julia comes running in and is like, y'all need to stop. But what I love is that Henry's like, he needs to go. I'm saying that he needs to go. And then Dudley was like, well, we should ask Julia. And he was like, well, he almost said, like, she ain't got nothing to do with it. And she peeped that. And he was like, well, choose, like, tell him that he has to go. And she's like, oh, I'm not getting in between. Because she having the time of her life. My husband and my love.
She has not done this many activities in years. She got to go to the jazz club. She got to go ice skating. She was shopping for lingerie. She was set.
I think every husband after 10 years of marriage should have a trial situation happen where a fine-ass man who's going to treat your wife better comes and tests the marriage. It's like one of those dating shows that they have where now
love
the
him
wife...
or leave him.
Yes, something like that. Something paradise, whatever. But so that the man has to like act the fuck, stop acting fucked up and step up to his wife.
Yeah.
I think a little competition is what is needed.
Well, I'm going to call it a movie.
It's called Preacher's Island. Or maybe I'll call it Angel's Escape. You know?
I like it.
Yeah.
We can't put this in the episode because people are going to steal your idea.
No, we know when this episode was released. We have enough, you know, copyright, trademark, whatever you want to call it.
So we don't have a game show, but we do have Jennifer Lewis. And she's like, Dudley, walk me across the street. I got to talk to you. I can't remember exactly what she said.
Let's stop looking at my daughter. I've never seen my daughter act like this before.
Yeah.
Get the step in. What are you doing? Like, I see you, Dudley. I see you. And she can't stop smoking them cigarettes.
She can't.
Until Dudley touches our hand and she feels the presence. And she throws that cigarette away. And I don't think we see her smoke after that.
No, she quits.
He cured her. And so I want to say it's the next day, and they're driving to someone's house, to Loretta Devine's house, to drop something off, I think.
Oh, the baskets, the Christmas baskets?
Yes. And Dudley's there. He sees like an opportune moment. So he makes Henry fall, and then Julia goes over to help him, and he makes Julia fall, but they're like laughing about it, and it's almost like they have that spark back again, which is
so
the whole reason for Dudley. Yeah.
Because these people ain't got nothing but dry grass between them. Called
And this is when Henry starts to reevaluate things. He decides he's going to go to Joe and tell him he's not going to head the new church, that he wants to maintain being a pastor at St. Matt's. And this is when we find out Joe actually owns St. Matt's. He's going to tear the church down and make it like a shopping complex with tennis courts, I think. Like, it was really weird, the combination.
Yeah, he was like, we don't play tennis. I like who is like who's playing tennis? What are you talking about? But oh, that house, Jackie. I don't think it was Loretta Devine's character's house. It was just a random family.
Okay.
But it was like 51 kids in that house, or 51 people, because two people first started coming out, and then it was like the whole porch was filled with people. I was like, how many people living in this house? But okay, the big house.
So
and after this is when I think Dudley goes to visit
Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. So Dudley shows up at Joe's. Joe is big mad. It's Christmas Eve. What the hell are you doing here?
He was like, I don't think Gregory Hines is a bad actor, but in this scene, he was very overacting, and I was very disappointed. I'm also disappointed that we didn't take the opportunity to just let him tap dance once. Just once.
Danielle, you don't just always have to dance tap dance.
Yes, when you're Gregory Hines, you do. You do. When you have Whitney Houston and Gregory Hines in a movie, she got to sing.
Tell me the scene where Gregory Hines could tap dance and it makes sense.
When they were singing, he catches the Holy Ghost.
Oh, at the end. Towards the end.
And it's at the end. It could be the credit scene. I think it would have made sense. He would have just thrown some sand on a little piece of wood and gone to tap to heaven. Okay?
I'm glad you have tap in your heart, because not... Everyone does.
It's a very missed art, and I feel sad that it's not more wide world. I don't know. Anywho, RIP the fact that Gregory Hines is gone, Whitney Houston is gone. It just breaks my heart. Had an opportunity. Continue.
So Dudley convinces Joe that he is an angel by having the piano play itself. So then
his reaction is so funny. He's like,
go closer.
Can I go closer? And then he just like slams it down. I don't have to see it. It's not real.
It's so funny.
And then now it's the next day. It's Christmas Day. Julia had seen the sermon that Henry was working on, where he was telling the congregation that St. Matt's is closing and he's going to work at this new church. So she wasn't happy about that. So it's the day of, he starts reading a sermon and he changes his tune and he starts actually preaching from the heart, which is something he hadn't done in a long time. He was kind of just rehashing her dad's old sermons and stuff. And so he gives this sermon and the lady freaks out about it. And she's like, it's not what's on the teleprompter. And she runs outside and people are like, actually, I think it's okay. So because he's preaching for his heart, from his heart, it's like what the community needed to hear. And then we get the Christmas play. And the Virgin Mary has little baby Jesus, but it's like one of the dolls that wets itself. And so she like walks into the back and just like slams the baby Jesus in Whitney's arms and is like, I'm all wet. And she just like storms off. And so what does Julia do in this situation?
She sings.
She goes out there in the middle of the children's play and she is the Virgin Mary.
I just feel like if they wanted her to sing, that they should have just given her an opportunity to sing. And
yeah,
it was such
it was awkward.
Yeah. It was
like, which of these don't belong?
But this was before the sermon and before. But this is the last scene that Julia and Dudley have together. Mm-hmm. And girl, when she went over to kiss him on the cheek, and I put these in parentheses because it looked just the corner of my eye like she was making out with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, y'all are really cutting it close here. The way I've never seen someone kiss somebody's cheek like that either. All sensual and slow motion. That was a long ass slow. Just slow side kiss.
Yeah.
Like when here's his face, right? Right.
And demonstration.
this is his cheek. So where my nail is, this is where the mouth is. And so this is she got that mouth. She got it. She did. She got the edges of the corners of his mouth.
Oh my gosh.
Y'all ain't fooling nobody.
Y'all should be watching on Spotify or YouTube to get the full demonstration that Danielle just did. But that still is also going to be your picture for this episode.
Just be my thing. Please don't, Jackie. I appreciate it.
So while Julia is singing, we see Dudley. He goes back to their house. This is where we see him change a photo to him and Julia. And it changes back.
About that part.
And Dudley's like, sorry.
Because thunder, you hear, which I think God has this much time to throw thunder. When Dudley's just having a little intimate moment with his picture. He got time for that.
He did a good job. Job accomplished. Let him have his moment.
Yeah. I wonder if in heaven he makes like a version of Julia, or maybe in heaven he waits for Julia. I think they could have a heavenly life later. Cool. Yeah. Heaven can wait. Part two, Julia and Dudley.
Eternal.
So we also see Joe go up to Henry and he says, I've had a change of heart. We'll see. I'm going to call the bank on Monday, see what we can do about this mortgage thing. So it seems like St. Matt's has been saved. And then Dudley walks by them as they're leaving the church by Julia and Henry. And they say, who's that? So at the very beginning, Dudley says, like, these are the rules of this. I'm here until my mission's complete. There was something else. And then it was, oh, I can't do anything that you could do. And then the third thing is, once I'm done, you won't remember me. Which he doesn't really follow because Jeremiah remembers him.
I think
it's just a
kid thing, like,
or touched
by an angel. Because he does start the movie saying, nobody believes me, but this happened. And I just think kids are immune, like, because they can see stuff. I mean, Jeremiah was seeing stuff about Dudley way before the rest of them were.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's a year later. They have adopted Hakeem. So Hakeem is back in the picture. I was worried about him. I'm glad he's back.
But and then I don't know if I like blanked out for a second. Do they talk about that? Like that? Or is it just like a part of the ending where Jeremiah's like, oh, we are adopting?
I think they just say Hakeem comes to stay with us for good.
Okay.
Or was he visiting for Christmas? And then,
like, I don't see when he came or how that was resolved. It's just like, he's now a part of the family.
Yeah, I think it was just like, after all of this happened, and they were like communicating more and stuff, like, I think they rethought the Hakeem situation and decided to adopt him, is what I assume.
That's good.
And then the angel on the top of the tree is literally Dudley. It's a man in a gray suit.
With wings.
I need someone to make me a Denzel Washington angel for this episode.
Oh my gosh.
And that is the preacher's wife. We did it.
Yay. So a few fun facts that we will throw at you guys before we get to our ratings. Let's see. So we talked about the fact that Whitney Houston was reluctant to accept the job. She said she didn't feel like she could do the role justice because it required her to play a dowdy housewife. She's like, I'm not about that life. But after reading the script for a second time, she did see parallels between her own life and the role of Julia, so she then accepted. And I'm sure the $10 million paycheck that she got for this movie did not hurt. It actually made her the highest paid Black actress at the time and the third highest paid film actress of 1996. So Big ups to Whitney for that one. It might have been a bomb, but it wasn't a bomb in her pocket.
And a few things about the choir. The Georgia Mass Choir appears in the film. And then the soundtrack to the film consists of gospel numbers and includes performances by Monica, Faith Evans, the three members of New Edition who embarked on solo careers, Bobby Brown, who was Houston's real-life husband at the time, Ralph Tresvant and Johnny Gill. Sissy Houston and Shirley Caesar are among others that appear on the soundtrack. And then Houston sang Richard Smallwood's I Love the Lord in the film. It was a favorite song of hers since childhood, and it gained renewed popularity when it was heard.
So the last two, not really fun facts, but sad facts, is during the filming at the church, a building a block away caught on fire and two children were killed. But a crew member was able to save one 4-year-old child in the building. And then a preteen girl was hit by a car and killed while crossing the street during the production in New York, Yonkers, New York. Well, sad.
Really, I feel like a lot of stuff happened on this set. Like, production was pushed back because of some issues as well. Like, it was giving, like, the set was, what's the word? Haunted?
Cursed?
There you go. That's the word. Cursed. It's a better word. So, no bueno. That's not really great to end on, but yes, that happened. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the ratings, Shalina, again, thank you for joining us. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram at Everything90sPodcast. I do have a YouTube channel, but I haven't been posting recently. But you could check that out as well, Everything90sPodcast on YouTube. And yeah.
And definitely give the podcast a listen. 100%.
Yes, please. Yes.
And check us out at No More Late Fees, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Threads. And let's get into our present day ratings. Shalina, after your second watching, what would you give this movie?
Maybe 2 day rental. Now that I'm reflecting on your critiques, Never thought of that. Yeah, maybe two-day rental.
Jackie?
I was really excited to watch this. I love Whitney Houston, love Denzel, and I just had higher hopes for this movie. I'm going 2 day rental. It just, like Danielle said, it wasn't a rom-com, but it also, like, wasn't a full It's a Wonderful Life. Like,
yeah,
you didn't see that transition from someone who's kind of down on life and all of a sudden making these changes. They were so subtle. So it could have been so much more, I feel.
Agreed. I feel like they kept missing the plot. And the plot was, this should have been a rom-com and we should have just cut out the middleman and we should have had a Whitney and Denzel movie and called it a day. Because their chemistry was on fire, y'all.
Yeah.
Okay. On fire. Definitely. So if you're an editor and you want to make that cut of this movie for me, it might be a short video. This is how I would like to remember this movie, that this was a rom-com of a single mother finding an angel in love with her, and she in love with him, and they end up happily ever after. And that's how I choose to. If I got that movie, five day all day. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I will say, though, rewatching the movie, I could see why I was mad, but I cried. I wasn't expecting to cry, but I cried when watching Whitney sing. Mm-hmm. Because it's just so sad. Like, when Whitney was here, I loved her, but I don't think I really appreciated. She's just a star. Like, it's rare you watch. There's not many people that kind of fit into that category that are just, you know, they were sent to this earth to be special and to move you. Her singing literally speaks to my soul. It just, and especially when she sings gospel music, because you could tell that she feels that, you know. Mm-hmm. To know that she was strung out on drugs at the time, but still was, like, able to do what she was doing, just mind-blowing. It just makes me so sad that she died and that she had such hardship and struggled with substance. So, for that, like, I would go watch those scenes again. So it's really hard. Like, I'm kind of stuck in between, somewhere between a 2 day and a 5 day, but I'm still going to go 2 day because I'm still mad.
Yeah. There wasn't the rom-com we deserved.
No rom-com, no tap dancing. I have
a lot of, but you know what? I do also want to give props to Penny Marshall. And like, I'm not sure. I don't think the writers of this was a very Black movie, and she was able to keep it that way without trying to project anything else. She was very respectful of the culture. And I think obviously Denzel producing the movie was really important, but she was a true ally in making this movie. It might not have done what they wanted, but I think it was a really good representation of the time. Yeah. So,
I think that's why I like it so much, is that representation. Cause I've never, outside of this movie, I've never seen a like Black Christmas or a Christmas movie with Black actors.
Yeah, there's a handful, but during this time period, there's not a ton. There's not a whole bunch. So I'm glad to see that we're getting a few more now.
Yes, more is popping up. Yeah.
Well, if you have anything you'd like to add about The Preacher's Wife or anything in general, hit us up at our quick job 909-601-NMLF, 909-601-6653. Spot us at the Twitters, hem us at the Threads, and you could be featured on a future episode.
And stay tuned for our annual year in review episode. We always love doing our annual review.
We really do. And thank you to Shalina for joining us. It was great, and you brought great insight to the movie. Oh, so thank you for hopping on.
No problem. This is really fun. One quick little side note, fun fact. Yeah. So the actor that plays Henry in a DCOM called Let It Shine, he also plays a preacher, and his character is very similar.
Oh, wow.
How he is in this one. Yeah.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
We all came with tidbits today. And as always, be kind and rewind.